Welcome to Dr. Red Says. Our show is all about taking charge of your mental, physical, and spiritual health. We'll answer your questions about the various healing modalities, and most of all, we're going to have some fun. Now, here is your host, Dr. Red.
Good afternoon, America. Well, it's a gorgeous day here in San Diego. It's like 68 degrees in San Diego, 69 where I am in Mira Mesa. And it's just beautiful outside. And I know that's not the case with some of y'all. More people on the north, the whole north, northwest, northeast of America are getting snowstorms. So that's pretty cool because it's December, and December is that wonderful month of faith, hope, charity, and white Christmases. So wherever you are in the world, I don't know what religion you might be, but pretty much in December, somebody's got a celebration going on. And I can only think of the three right offhand is like Christmas, Hanukkah, and Kwanzaa, but I'm sure there are more. And then January 1st, by the time we finish this month's theme, you're going to be celebrating the new year because everybody is. I mean, wow, it's 2020. So here's the thing. Faith, hope, and charity. It's wonderful. But in the middle of all of that, that means parties. And what happens is you're subjected to seasons, eatings, sucking spirits, and stressing out over shopping. By the time you get through with all those, you kind of want to succumb to the first couple, eating and drinking. Not a good thing. So we have an expert today who's going to talk to us about addictions. And I don't know how, I don't want to say everybody's addicted to things, but certainly during the months of November, December, and January, people just indulge way too much. So even if you're not addicted to a particular substance, or now we're arguing in America over vaping versus smoking, even if you're not addicted to something, some of these techniques are incredible just for making your life better. And so I am just so honored to have our guest today. His name is Scott Silverman, and he is... Sorry about that, a crisis coach, a family navigator, and the CEO of Confidential Recovery. I like that word confidential because people won't get help. I work with PTSD people, and they won't go get help because somebody's going to have it on their record, and it scares them, and they need the help. So it's Confidential Recovery, and he's a subject matter expert on behavioral health. See, I'm so excited, I can't even talk. So he's an expert on behavioral health. This is what we need, you guys. I mean, medicine's advancing, but our brains, I'm not so sure. So I am so happy to introduce you to Scott Silverman. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you today? And happy holidays.
Oh, thank you. You too. I'm great. I haven't been out trying to do Black Friday or Cyber Monday or any. I just like skipped all of that because I think it would have totally fried my brain to try and go out and shop, yeah, especially
San Diego. I'm jumping into Purple Wednesday.
Oh my God. Well, you know what? I think one company, I don't remember who it was, they made a whole month of Black Friday. I said that, didn't that kind of defeat the purpose?
I think it does. But, I don't know, it's kind of like you watch the news now that, you know, the headline of the news with everything is breaking news, breaking news, breaking news, breaking news. It's almost like, how can everything be breaking news? Well, just because,
seriously,
you know, it's just coming out now, but it's kind of an interesting, you know, flag that seems to be flowing in most news media today is breaking news. Everything's breaking news. It's going to rain. It's not going to rain. It's going to be hot. It won't be hot. The wind's blowing. There's fire starting. Lots of snow. It gets a little crazy when you think about it.
I hate to admit this, but I was just really torqued off because all of the networks preempted my soap operas. And I do have them on in the background while I'm working because I work at home. They preempted them all for those hearings, the impeachment hearings. Oh, my God. One, it was not breaking news. And two, it was just so boring. And I'm going, give me back my soap operas. I don't know. I think we know too much now.
Or we know enough that we don't want to know anymore.
That's a possibility. Well, here's the thing, because you're talking about addictions or overuse of things, and the big ones that I see is the food, because the nation is totally obese. Drinking, everybody knows about alcoholics and drinking and driving. Stress, certainly I don't know that that's an addiction, but it causes you to smoke more, drink more, and do all these other things. And so this country is going downhill in a real hurry. It's like a boxcar race. How do we stop that? And how did you get into this business?
A couple of great questions, but, you know, let me work backwards. I want to, you know, because I know I want to just talk about something that frustrates me, because I think you kind of hit on it, you know, and I, look, I'm a subject matter expert. What that means is other people have labeled me a subject matter expert because they call me with things that are within my wheelhouse that are topical, whether it's overdosing, you know, major bust at the border, you know, morbidity rate going up with minors, the morbidity rate with, you know, adults. Grandparents becoming parents because their children expired through an overdose. And, you know, I think this time of year, you know, and I don't think we need to label people or label things, but my big pet peeve is, you know, the stigma around asking for help. I'm going to put it in general. Stigma
yes.
for asking for help. And, you know, the fact that people believe that if you don't pick something up, you won't have a problem with it. But we don't label any other disease that way. We don't even, and what I like to liken, I call the addiction, disease of addiction, as an example. That's a label, of course. But when you think about diabetes,
oh yeah,
it's a disease. But when somebody, you know, is having difficulty or getting sick when they're eating inappropriate foods or foods that are reacting, you know, negatively with their body, they go see an expert. The expert does the testing, and from the testing, they come up with the results of a prognosis, and they put together a healthcare plan so you can live a normal life the rest of your life. That does not
help. You have a really good point.
Substance abuse.
I think more people would go to doctors or clinics like yours or whatever that they need to if they were like 100 pounds overweight and they just said, I need to manage my diabetes, if they didn't say I'm here for weight loss because I'm here because I'm obese. Because people right. do that. So if they have a secondary illness that's caused by their addiction, use that.
So what I'd like to do is take a few minutes to talk about self-medication. So, for example, to your point, you know, how are people coping today? How are people dealing with the stressors today? You know, whether it's the internet, whether it's, you know, internet and porn, whether it's gambling, whether it's compulsive obsessive behaviors, whether it's untreated trauma. I mean, think about it. If you're living in today's world, and you're exposed to all the different things that are going on around you, and you don't have significant coping mechanisms in place. And I'm not talking about what you were given when you were born as a child, but things you've grown up to better understand, you know, like, for example, meditation, journaling, just breathing, going for a walk, yoga, mindfulness, things that you do for your mind, body, and soul on a daily basis. If you don't know how to do those things, how are you processing all this information that's coming at you? How are we processing all the negative energy that we're seeing and experiencing on a daily basis? And I'm talking as something as simple as being a parent to a child in today's world, when you're having to listen to your PTA and your county talk about how your kids have to learn these drills about how to save their own life if there's a shooter on the campus.
Yeah.
So we have things going on and coming at us in today's world. Not that it didn't exist before, but it's coming at us, in my opinion, in larger volume, more consistently, and we don't have the tools per se. So people are picking up different items right now. I mean, vaping, for example, in just the last 3 years has turned out to be a tool that was developed to replace tobacco smoking. It's turned out to be a tool as an entry system now to bring in THC and other chemicals into the body. So, and I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that we're not using our common sense to evaluate what our next steps look like. And I'm going to take this a step further. Your point about partying during the holiday season. One of the big things that we're seeing now in our community is kids are going to parties, kids anywhere from middle school, high school, even college. And each one of them brings something and they put it in a bowl on the coffee table or in the kitchen. And at a certain point, everybody reaches in and grabs whatever's in that bowl and takes it. Well, what if something's got heroin or fentanyl cut with it, or carfentanyl, or methamphetamine, or it's an edible that's been compressed to a pill, or it's counterfeit medication that's been made by somebody in their garage and they brought it to the party? So even if somebody doesn't have an active addiction issue, if you will, or isn't even prone to self-medicating, but accidentally takes a pill,
and it can kill you.
But with something, it can kill you. And small doses of fentanyl are causing overdoses right now in this country like we've never seen before. And people are seeing even heroin cut with fentanyl put in, mixed with THC, going into the vaping pipes. So my point is, addiction is a critical topic, and I spent a lot of time talking about it. But I think what I really want to focus on today is self-medicating, what we're doing right now to help us help ourselves feel better, so to speak. You know, it's too much stress. I need a glass of wine or three glasses of wine, or I need to take some edibles, or I'm going to, smoke this, or you know what? I can't sleep at night, so I need to go get a prescription for a benzo, for Ambien, so I can sleep. And now I'm having difficulty waking up. I've got to have some sort of stimulant to do something like that. So that's what we're seeing more of, like we never have before. And it just scares me as somebody who, I'm on this funeral avoidance campaign. I just don't want to keep going to funerals where somebody is ingesting something on purpose or accidentally, but they're losing their life over it. And when somebody expires with a drug overdose, whether it's accidental or on purpose, it isn't just them who are leaving a scarred stain, if you will, on the planet. It's everyone who cared about them. It's their family. It's the people who worked with them.
There's two levels to this.
Well, and that, of course, and that aggravates and amplifies the trauma.
See, I appreciate that part. The other part that people are not paying attention to, but it's getting better, is people who get into these medications. Like, I just broke my hip, and I only got a certain counted number of pain pills because they are starting to catch on that somebody has a major accident. They take these pain pills. Oh, my gosh, that feels good. And then they can't stop. And it's not their fault. They had an accident, or they had an illness, or they had surgery. So sometimes it's started innocently, but you're stuck. And what do you do?
Well, I'll give you an example of some catastrophic building on what you just described. In 2016, 264 million prescriptions for opioids were written in this country. 264 million. Okay? So
it's a lot of
the Surgeon General came out 2 years ago and finally admitted, after all these studies, that OxyContin for pain long term doesn't work. And doctors have slowed down the script writing. Hospitals are starting to dose down and make people, go see their primary doctor for, renewing prescriptions. So there is certainly a heightened awareness. But now what's happening is, so my point to that is, and of the 264 million prescriptions, according to the CDC, 61% of those still sit in medicine cabinets. They still sit in someone's medicine cabinet.
Unless
nobody
ever wants
to throw drugs away, because they may need them one day, number one. And number two, you should never put them down the toilet or the sewer, or you should never put them in, the trash. It's unsafe to do that. I mean, I work with a group called Safe Homes Coalition, and that's what we're trying to educate people to do, is how to remove those things in a safe way so they can be disposed of correctly and gotten off the planet in a safe way. So the bottom line is, all of the unfortunate path we've been on for decades needs to be cleaned up, and we need to change the way we think. And I think doctors are now being taught in medical school, script writing is something, it's a tool, but be careful on your doses, monitor your patients, and don't just give someone 120 days worth of OxyContin anymore. But it's going to take a long time to get that out of the medicine cabinets, put them in a safe place, dispose of them. And it's also going to take time for doctors to prescribe differently. So the good news is, there's a lot of awareness, but we're still losing over 200 people every single day in this country behind opioids.
Jeez.
Every day. That's a plane crash every single day. We're talking just opioids, prescription drugs, and heroin, fentanyl, and carfentanil.
Wow.
All right, that doesn't include methamphetamine, alcohol, other addictions, and or suicide. So when you think about it, that's a lot of people dying every single day in our country, and a lot of families being impacted negatively.
Can you look at suicidal ideation as kind of an addiction? Because I know someone who just wants to cut she gave up on the arms, now she's cutting legs, but just wants to cut all the time, doesn't know why.
I would not see that as an addiction. But I'm not a psychiatrist and I'm not a clinician. I think the suicide ideation, someone who is wishing to take their own life, there's a behavioral health issue, there's a mental health issue going on that's completely different. Now, some of that might be induced or amplified through substance abuse and self-medicating, but I do not know how to answer that question. It's a great question. I've actually never heard that question before, because I think your question is suicide ideation, thinking of suicide, is that an addiction? That's a great question.
Well, because I do know people, and you know, I work with PTS. They don't like the D anymore, PTS. And there are people who just really want to kill themselves every day and can't figure out why and can't figure out how to get out of it. And it's a struggle keeping them here. So some of the things that we're going to talk about that you guys do, I have to say I love it because I'm an alternative healer. And so I love all these alternative methods. Pardon?
Go ahead.
I don't see drugs anywhere in your plan. I don't see a doctor that's connected with you that gives more drugs, because putting someone who is suicidal in the hospital and then just fooling around with their drug titer, you know, like, oh, let's do this much of this. No, let's change it to that. That's not helping.
Mm-hmm.
They're not learning anything. And when they get out of the hospital, what are they going to do?
And that, you know, look, in my industry, you know, the treatment industry I'm in with Confidential Recovery, according to science, if you go to a 28-day program today, tomorrow, anywhere in the world, 28-day program, and you go to this secure environment, no decision anxiety, you come out of there and you do nothing else other than what you did while you were in there, and you do nothing else to practice your path of recovery, you have a 95% chance of relapsing.
Oh, wow. Wow, no wonder this kid is in.
Well, the thing that's fascinating is this has gone on for decades, and the same data, same outcomes have been studied for decades, but yet for some reason, you know, we're not finding ways to improve the modalities that we're offering people. And there's a lot of great skilled clinicians out there, but at the end of the day, you can't take years of abuse and change it in a month. It takes years to transform. You know, well, whether it's holistic or medication assisted, whatever it is, it takes time.
And it does take keeping up the practice, and that's the problem. I think people that do get hospitalized, when we get to the rant after the break, we'll talk about my rant is insurance. So you go to something that insurance pays for, because some of the things that you do, they may not. So you go somewhere where insurance pays for it, they give you this treatment program, then you go home and you're kind of like all by yourself again. Boom. It's you're back where you started. So there need to be more of these treatment plans like yours that have engagement, that the client engages every single day for the rest of their lives to stay healthy. And they're not there.
Again, just like diabetes, you know, you check your blood sugar level throughout the day and you put insulin in your body as needed, and you can live a pretty normal life. And most modalities of any kind of substance abuse, once the the removal takes place, the detox and stabilization, and then the teaching and the new modalities and how to live life on life's terms get implemented, you can live a normal life. It's amazing. I don't want to make it sound simple, but realistically, it is simple. It's that simple. Go see a professional, have the work done that needs to be done, participate in your own journey, grab the tools, implement them, but stay in touch. Stay tethered to whatever learning opportunity you had, and be mindful that if you don't bring something into your life each day to add value, in the theory, it decreases the value and things will change and little things make big differences. So if you do the right things for the right reasons, you're going to head out in the right direction. And if you get off course by one degree over a period of time, you're going to end up way off course.
Well. Okay, now, so if somebody does recognize this and they want to come see you, we did talk about stigma here. What happens? Say you're a professional. I know, because I'm with the military people, I know people that have these super top secret clearances. They don't want to say anything to anybody because they're afraid they're going to lose their job, lose their clearance, lose whatever, get kicked out of the service. How do you counter that?
Well, I give them my phone number. I say, look, call me at 619-993-2738. 619-993-2738. You call me. That's my direct line. Call Scott H. Soberman. Google me first if you want to be comfortable. And just call me. And anywhere in the country, any one of your listeners can call me. We'll have a conversation. I am a crisis coach. But I'm happy between now and the end of the year, anyone who's listening to us today, if they mention your name, I'm happy to give them 10 minutes of free coaching. And then if I can help them personally with my modality and Confidential Recovery's outpatient program, and if I can help you, I'll give you some ideas, suggestions, options, and opportunities and help point you in a direction so you can move towards a path of change that's a good fit for you. Because I'm a firm believer one size does not fit all, and what we do may not be the best for somebody, but we may be part of the journey, and if I can't help you, I'll find a way to help you.
Yeah, and you have some pretty cool ones. Now, a couple of them I think you might need to do in-house because EMDR, that's actually managing eye movements, right?
Correct. No, it's one of the best tools for PTSD.
Wow. So you need a practitioner with you for that one. Now, if somebody from Kansas calls you,
those are what we call trauma-informed experts. Those are people who have studied it. It's a great technique, and the science says it's one of the best tools to deal with PTSD. And very soon, we're going to be working with veterans here in San Diego starting in January. We're very excited about that.
I hope so. One of my doctorates is in clinical hypnotherapy. They have used hypnotherapy since World War II when they didn't have drugs enough, you know? So it's been documented in the 40s, and the VA still doesn't accept hypnotherapy. I know they take EFT, which is tapping on your meridians. If they will accept EMDR and pay for that, that would be wonderful. These veterans deserve it, but sometimes they don't have the money.
Well, but there's also ways, though, through scholarships and through funding opportunities and through, you know, I'm also an expert fundraiser. I ran a nonprofit for a long time and still do. So there's ways of leveraging that. But, you know, someone's got to be thinking out of the box and someone's got to be willing to help. You know, we take insurance, but insurance today is changing every hour and it's always complicated. But at the end of the day, if people really are wanting help, there's ways to do it, because I've learned when I hear somebody come in and say, you know, I don't have any money for my copay. And I say, wait a minute, what did you tell me you spent last year in gambling? How much did you pay your attorneys for the DUIs?
There's a way. Yeah. It's amazing. My husband and I are going to a special clinic. He has Agent Orange heart failure and a couple other good things. And so he's an MD, but he joined a holistic health group. They don't pay for that. And so we're looking at $15,000 each for a treatment. And my husband is like having a heart attack right there. And the guy says, look, do you want to pay now or do you want somebody to pay for you when you're in an assisted living home and can't do anything? And he really has a point there. If you can scrape up the money while you're young and can produce money-making opportunities, sure beats being housed in an assisted living home.
Yeah. Well, that's what long-term care is for, is to pay for that. But you got to get it when you got to get it. And you're right. There's things that, and look, it's fascinating because up until about 2 years ago, the longevity for the average person was extended longer than it's ever been in just the last 2 years because of the morbidity rate increasing from all the things you and I have just been discussing. The average ages of expiring or longevity is now decreasing back again for the first time in like 20 years.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you,
what's happening.
So tell me, how did you get into this? Why would you be interested in this particular subject?
Well, thanks. I'm glad one of us has still got a good memory. And that was the first part of your question. So I answered the second part first. I apologize. I got into this. I've only been in the treatment business for about 6 years. And I got into it because I'm a guy in long-term recovery. And I say that proudly and I say it publicly because I hope someone out there, like you were describing, a professional is hearing this, maybe going, oh, God, if he could do it, maybe I can. And if you don't know how to do it, make a phone call and we'll talk about how. So I just celebrated 35 years of continuous sobriety on the 13th of November, so I'm very excited about that. And it's a very long time, but one of the things that I've learned is what I need to do each day, each week, each month, each year to maintain my own recovery. And, you know, what works for me, and I mean, it worked for you, but I've experienced a lot of different modalities, and I believe that, you know, one size does not fit all.
Well, here's the deal.
I've been into helping people.
Go ahead. You have experience these modalities. When I hate it when you go to a doctor and they say something, and they say, so how does that make you feel? But they don't know. They've never had that injury. They've never had that illness. They don't know anything about it. And it's nice to have somebody who's been there and say, yeah, I know what that feels like.
Well, exactly. And that's why my family navigator part of my business, I'm really growing, because most families don't know how to navigate this. I mean, you break an arm, you go to ER, you know, you start coughing up blood, you call your doctor, you have difficulty sleeping, you call somebody. But when it comes to this disease of addiction, you know, you're having blackout episodes with drinking, you talk to your family and they go, that's right, Uncle Charlie, last night you walked through another glass door, another one. Oh, when did I walk through the other one? And then you show them the video from, you know, 6 months ago. So wow. My point is, that rant, by the way, is this disease of addiction, the self-medication and abuse that some people are doing to their body, mind, and soul is so out of control now. And we're losing so many people so quickly at a rate we've never seen before, that it is so frustrating for me that we're not having more conversations about it. You know, here in San Diego, we get two cases of the flu, people are hospitalized, it makes the news for a week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And in that same week, we may have had 7 people overdose, 16 DUIs, and 3 or 4 people killed on the roads because somebody was under the influence. And not even the person under the influence. If the person under the influence killed somebody else. By the way, an interesting fact. 15% of our community nationally has an active addiction issue that will erupt over the next 12 months.
Well,
and of the 15% that who have this issue, only 10% will seek help. But what's fascinating to me of that number, of the 15%, every 15 people of 100 will impact 7 people every day negatively while they're impaired.
Wow.
So that's 85% of our community that is impacted by somebody who's impaired. And that could be hungover from the night before, under the influence of something mood altering, acting out inappropriately because they have this compulsive obsessive behavior that's untreated.
I am glad you said that. We have like 1 minute. We have 1 minute to break. But when we come back, I want to talk about your treatments, and I want to expand on the family thing, because it's kind of like if you take a dog and put him in a cage, he's just going to sit there and be in a cage. If you take him and show him what the field is like and it's fun to run and everything, great. But if he has to go back to the cage again, that's his life. It's the cage. So we have to get families to understand and facilitate healing. So when we come back, I want to talk about that, your different programs. I have 4. Your website's terrific. I have 4 that I picked up from your website. And I want to talk about those and how your family can help you, if you don't mind.
And not at all. My pleasure.
When we come back, we will be doing this with every show I have an angel. So here is our angel of addictions. This is probably the biggest health crisis in America. It's not heart attacks. It's not it's addictions. So we will be right back with our angel of addictions, who knows how to get out.
Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
If you've got no success, perhaps you need Success No Therapy. Dr. Red, a.k.a. Dr. Sarah Young, uses hypnotherapy, Reiki, aromatherapy, EFT, NLP, angel healing, card reading, and even basic common sense in order to find out what you need and how to get you there. Dr. Red is also a psychic medium, and if you're outside Southern California, Dr. Red can present distance healing sessions. For more information about these and other services that Dr. Red offers, visit drsarahmyoung.net or call 858-860-8255. 800-480-0461. FaceTime and Skype sessions are also available.
Here's a question for you. You got no success? I've got the therapy. I'm Dr. Sarah Young, founder of Success No Therapy, and I'll help you define your success and choose the therapy that'll get it for you. You name it, hypnotherapy, aromatherapy, timeline therapy, NLP, EFT, crystals, angel healing, and more. They're all available anywhere in the world. Like my radio show, Dr. Red Says, we are here online 24/7. Visit www.drsarahmyoung.com or www.facebook.com/drredsays to arrange an appointment, or call 858-860-0461. Blessings.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
You are listening to Dr. Red Says. If you have a question or comment about the show today, we invite you to call into the program at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to drredsays@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, y'all. And this is a really important show. All December, we're going to talk about coping mechanisms. But the first thing you have to do is just recognize if you have a problem. And so the angels picked a card for me. You know, every week we do an angel and gemstone card. And they picked a stone called apophyllite. And if you're not familiar with that, just Google it and look at it. And the vibrations will hit you, even if you don't have the stone right in your hand. And the stone apophyllite says, do you wish to gain a better understanding of a situation? It's time to meditate. Sit in silence. Open your consciousness. Listen for your soul's truth and embrace it without judgment. Mental clarity and self-acceptance are gifts of a regular meditation practice. And I know Scott's going to talk about that. It's a perfect card for us. And it was brought to you by the Angel of Meditation. So these are some affirmations that the angels would like you to say. And I say them three times because it's a magic number, but we're not going to do that on the air. Just catch it later at 1 o'clock in the morning if you're a night owl, or tomorrow you can catch it on the archives and write these down. I am blessed with mental clarity, great mental clarity. I clear my mind effortlessly and immediately know and trust my inner truths. I accept myself without judgment. I meditate regularly with great ease and enjoy being insightful. So that is a great card, because I notice on your site that you do mention meditation. What are some of the things that you do to help first the individual, and then we'll talk about the family? Oh, see, I told you, you're so interesting, I would forget. We were going to talk about a rant. We have the rant of the week, and that's when something makes you so crazy that you hold your breath and turn red and start looking like Dr. Red. Send me your rants. If you have the greatest rant of the month, you win a red wig, and I will actually go take a Dr. Red wig and put it on your head and take a picture. If not, I'll mail it to you, but you got to promise to take a picture. But you need to get these rants out. That's probably one of the reasons people are self-medicating and drinking. They got these rants. So, Scott, do you have a rant?
I shared it earlier subtly, and I'll bring it up again. One of my biggest rants is that we have this stigma about people asking for help that have issues around substance abuse, addiction, self-medication. And it concerns me that the three magic words, I need help, are some of the toughest words to get out of one's mouth. So my rant is to encourage people.
Here's the deal. When you get and I just live with a retired commander, so I don't know about the rest of the world, but my father was a colonel in the Army. So I got the Navy and the Army. When you have been one of those and you've commanded whole battalions or something, or you've been an XO on a ship, it's really hard to say, I need help.
Well, that's where the family comes in.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I just did a whole segment on KOSI, our local, you know, big TV station here, talking about you as a family member, are generally going to be the ones who's most impacted by the behavior of the person who has the issue. And you, yeah, as a family member, I want to empower family members to get on the phone, make a phone call, do some research, call an expert, and don't look to the person who has a problem and say, look, you have a problem, you need to do something about it. Because, first of all, the issue is a disease of denial. So the odds are they don't think they have a problem.
True.
So it's you as a family member, as a loved one, as a sibling, as a caring friend, colleague, close coworker, sit the person down and let them know you really care about them and you're scared and you want to know what you can do to help. And then just be quiet and listen. From what they'll say to you next, you'll have an idea of what you should do next. If your car didn't start, okay, in the morning, yeah, you would make a phone call to get help if you, yeah, didn't know how to fix it. Okay? And if you tried to fix it and you couldn't, you'd still have to ask for help. So what I'm suggesting families do is find a way to ask for help. And if you don't know how, just go on to the internet or call me at 619-993-2738. You can call or text me. You can star 67, I think it is, if you want. I don't need to know who you are. Call me. Let's talk about it. And if I can be a resource for you or your family, let me be it. Let me be the buffer. Let me be your family navigator. Let me help you get pointed in the right direction. Or call your primary doctor. Call your faith-based leader. Talk to maybe someone else in your family who's maybe been through it, or someone in your family who knows someone who's been through it, and talk with them. Don't live with this by yourself. You know, there was a pilot about 2 years ago in the United Kingdom who left this very detailed note about how he was so concerned about his drinking and his depression, he did not want to bring it to his superior officers, and
wow,
ended up taking his own life because he didn't know what to do. So to your point about somebody who's in the business of helping others.
He didn't do it in a plane, though. He didn't do it in a plane with 100 passengers, though.
No. He was Air Force pilot, but he took his own life. But the point is, and I'm sure that's potentially happened. I think it has actually happened, but I don't really know. But what I'm suggesting is that we need to encourage people that there's a saying when I first got clean, people said to me, we will love you until you can love yourself.
Ah.
I mean, think about that for a second. We will love you. I will love you until you can relearn or learn how to love yourself. That's okay. I'm here to support you. And that's what families can do, because this disease of addiction, again, I said earlier, I don't like labels, but sometimes you've got to fragment something and put it up in somebody in the lights in a way where people understand it. It's a family disease. It's a family disease, because if you are the one who has the addiction and other family members are exposed to it on a daily basis and they're not able to support, help, shut it down, control it, redirect, reflect, or deflect, then they're part of it because they're living with it and they're suffering and they've got untreated trauma and PTS from your behavior, even though you, the addict, if you will, doesn't wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to make everyone around me miserable for the entire day because that's what I like to do. I've never met anybody who's ever said that consciously.
No, but they're sure good at it. Seriously. I mean, I do know families where one person has a problem and the whole rest of the family is agonized and this person is not paying any attention.
No, I absolutely agree. And that's where the family has to get educated and learn how to process what's going on in front of them to really help that person who's got the issue. Because the person with the issue, unless they're handcuffed to a gurney in an emergency department, they're probably not going to be reaching up with the other hand going, hey, I need some help. So we have to find ways to help them. You know, there's a saying, oh, you have to wait for them to hit their bottom. Well, sometimes you do, but I don't necessarily believe you always have to wait to do that. As a family, you can get educated and learn how to process. I mean, look, the holiday season's in front of us. Every family's going to have somebody that they have, they love, you know, because 1 in 4 people are impacted by this, you know, disease of addiction one way or another.
Wow.
And they're going to be together during the holidays. They're going to be together during the holidays. And when they are, if the family cannot react to or buy into or enable, but if you don't know what those three terms mean, you need to get online, you need to make some phone calls, you need to get educated.
Well,
there's
lots
of information for families out there.
That's the next point. You have modalities here that I think are fascinating, and this is my, I'm not an expert on substance abuse, but I am an expert on holistic care, and I didn't even recognize a couple of these. So please explain them to us. The ones that I took off the page were DBT, EMDR, body mindfulness, that sounds cool, and seeking safety.
I lost you that last part again.
So it's DBT, EMDR, embodied mindfulness,
right,
and seeking safety.
All that's good stuff.
How do you do that?
Well, couple things. Well, the EMDR is a technique that's used for, you know, I call it for PTSD or untreated trauma, and we bring in experts. That's how we do it. CBT is the cognitive behavioral therapy that's done normally in an outpatient traditional treatment program like ours, a confidential recovery. And, you know, we call that education where, you know, detox is medically supervised, residential treatment's a lot more involved, and the outpatient program and the outpatient piece is more of the continuum of care. Once you get stabilized, remove the cravings, and you're medically sound and approved by a doctor to get into the next modality of treatment. And then our goal is to help, through the education process, provide the tools and discuss the options and opportunities and help people, and then support their families with all these different wraparound services with, like, mindfulness, yoga, meditation, breathing, and, you know, going to different recovery groups if you can. The social model works really, really well. And finding ways to get new tools in your life on how to live your life without mood-altering substances or mood-altering behaviors or self-medicating through what I consider to be, you know, defined as inappropriate behavior that can, you know, work against the body, mind, and soul. And we help people focus on what we like to call gut health.
Ah, that's your second brain is in there. It's in your gut. So when you have a gut feeling, you might want to trust that. So that's very interesting. And a couple of the things, I know that the CBT, you might want to have a professional tell you how to change your behavior. EMDR, you do need a professional. But the mindfulness, this is cool because, I'm sorry about that. That happens. Okay. Like I said, nobody ever calls my office except when I'm on here. So the doing yoga, meditating, if you do that together, not only is it healing the person, but it's kind of bonding the family. My husband and I do yoga together.
No, I agree. I think it's great. By the way, all the modalities you've just asked me about that I've described are important. All are done by professionally trained, clinical certified professionals. That's the way to do it. You can't just go on YouTube and check out a piece on mindfulness or yoga and then turn around 10 minutes later and provide the same teaching for somebody else. When it comes to CBT, these are, you know, licensed clinical social workers, marriage family therapists, psychologists, and of course, when it comes to what we call today in the industry MAT, which is medication-assisted treatment, where some people are working the CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy model, along with assisted medication to go through the not only the withdrawals, but also medications that can help with the abstinence model and also the craving eradication and removal. So those modalities are all done by medical professionals or you know, behavioral health experts. I'm a consultant, which means I help try to put all that together, but I'm not a clinician. So when I bring people in, I bring experts to the table who are clinically experienced and certified to provide those tools. And again, one size does not fit all. So through what's called the psychological social, you know, model, you know, the psych model, we do a testing evaluation, and it's called the psych social. And basically the evaluator comes up with a plan, but in early recovery, while you're still under the influence or actively using, you know, cognitively, your ability to bring in information is kind of limited and restricted. So as you progress in the outpatient program, the monitoring goes on and the cognitive testing continues. And we even do urinalysis for efficacy to make sure that, you know, you're not putting something in your body. And that's a way of, you know, monitoring whether you're improving. And if you're not, getting to a higher level of care. And sometimes people relapse. And when they do, we kick them in the program. We don't kick them out. We kick them in. So we know enough about the model of what it takes to get better. And we're just working on trying to find ways to encourage people to ask for support and have families get educated so we can, you know, I call it again, fetal avoidance. I don't.
Everyone in your group, you have mentioned, they are professionals, they are trained professionals. And you guys, this is important because, and I know because I've got doctorates in this stuff, when they train for these things, they learn all of the variants that go on. So my second doctorate's in hypnotherapy, it's clinical hypnotherapy. But when I hypnotize somebody, I can see things that you're not going to find out watching a YouTube video. And if they're going in a particular direction, I can bring them back. If they need help with more of this than that, we'll do that. And then we'll get on to the main problem. But if you don't have a professional guiding you and you're watching YouTube videos, no, of course it's not going to work. Holy cow. So that is important because I was on the YouTube last night and there were like 5 million meditations for everything, you know, and I'm going, cool. None of them work for me. So that's why you go to a professional.
Well, and you know, there's lots of them in our community. We have standalone solo practitioners. We have treatment centers. We have detox spas. We have detoxes. We have residential treatment. We have, equestrian equine therapy.
Wow.
There's all kinds of different modalities around. And there's faith-based, there's non-faith-based, and there's tons of information out there.
Can I join? I'm addicted to animals.
Are you?
Oh yeah. And I used to, the only badge I ever got in Girl Scouts was horsewoman because I just love animals.
And I don't, you know, I think that if there's such a thing as a good addiction, I would say being addicted to animals would be probably a good addiction. And I'm not quite sure it's an actual addiction. It just sounds like it's a real passion. I hear you. And those are healthy things to do. And when you think about it, you know, being able to associate part of the gut health with association with animals. And I know a couple people that do the equine therapy.
Oh, it's
and
incredible.
Watching people connect to animals is just, it's stunning to watch. It's stunning.
It is. I mean, I don't know what it is with, I have cats and dogs, you know, but when you get on a horse and you just go out, I was raised in Tucson in the 50s. You could just get on a horse and ride. That's kind of a meditation, but you and that horse have a connection that I've never seen before. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And you know, I'm not sure there's studies around it, but you really don't need the science. You just accept it. To your point, when you experience it, it's hard to maybe articulate, but there's nothing quite like it. I mean, we have three dogs and, you know, having animals in your life and being able to experience that, you know, some people do it with music, some do it with exercise, some do it with, you know, going to the opera, the symphony, fine dining, you know, whatever works the best is what's important. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
That's important.
That's true. Well, so of these, what is seeking safety? We didn't talk about that one. What is seeking safety?
Seeking safety is exactly what it sounds like. Is what one needs to do to be safe. Whether you as a family member have to be safe because you're dealing with the individual who might be at the other end of seeking safety. They're seeking, you know, substance abuse and inappropriate behavior and safety also in the group itself where you're feeling comfortable and you're open with the facilitator and you're able to know that what's taking place from a conversation perspective is for your best interest, as in your best interest, and is for you as an individual. So we really try to work with the ego side, you know, of what caregivers try to do and team talk about how do we best serve this individual? How do we do what's best for our client? What is it they need the most? And then once we understand that, the next part of it is how do we support the family? What does the family need from us? What do we need to provide to make sure the family has the tools that they need a more effective job, not necessarily a better job, but a more effective job to deal with all the different issues that come up when, an individual is going through this issue.
Without that help, they could end up being burned out too. And then they're looking for something to self-medicate with, because being a caregiver is hard. I mean, it's tough business. So I know there are groups that, at least for Alzheimer's, there are groups where you can go, and there are actually people that'll come over and kind of watch for you while you go out and just take a break. So I don't think we explore all of the options that are available to us. We just have our problem and curl up in our, and, you know, read Facebook.
It's a good point, you know, and we're so engaged with different levels of social media today. Sometimes we're so unplugged, it's hard to plug back in. I mean, we did it at our Thanksgiving table. I asked everyone that was with us if they'd be willing to take their phone and put it in a basket. Oh, my God.
Did we do it?
You think I'd reach in their pockets and took all their money out?
Not only did they not...
They thought I was crazy for even asking, but that's okay. I wanted to plant the seed.
Yeah, I don't understand it, because I do have, even my sons, I have two sons, they would rather text than talk on the phone. And I said, you know what? It's hard to type, man. Why wouldn't you just want to text and call somebody? You can hear the expression. You can hear what mood they're in. You know, you can respond right away. Texting is insane, but everybody wants to do that.
It is a way of life, and, you know, and watching, you know, my kids, when they're with their friends, I mean, there's five or six of them at a table, they're texting each other, not even talking to each other.
It is so crazy. Seriously,
yeah,
I can see emailing a picture or sharing an emoji once in a while, but, yeah, what happened to conversation? And that's important. If we can't tell the tone of what somebody is giving us, how do we know how they feel?
You know, one of the things I've been talking a lot about recently is when family gets together, you know, as the adult, if you're the adult or perceived adult of the family, try to listen better. And they're going, well, I listen all the time. So we do some role playing. We find out they're really not listening. What they're doing is they're telling the child what they think they need to hear. And what they're actually listening for is to see if the child heard what they told them they should be doing. So what I try to encourage, you know, families to do is when you're asking someone to do something, change it, reframe it in form of a question or make it a suggestion, and then ask them how they feel about what it is you're suggesting. But instead of talking through your question, just shut up and listen to your child or your sibling, and just listen. Actually stop and listen and hear what they're saying, and create a portal for them to have a conversation with you and for you to have one with them.
I think maybe that's why the groups that you had mentioned, like Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon and Narcanon, are so good, because everybody's there with the same issue and they listen to each other. It's amazing just to have somebody come, you know, have somebody just sit and listen to you.
That's, you know, and again, you mentioned just a couple of them, and there's lots more out there. Smart Recovery Refuge is out there. LifeRing is out there. And there's all kinds of different faith-based groups and Christian-based, Jewish-based, you know, and agnostic, atheist. So I encourage everyone to not discount the opportunity, because it's not just this. And I actually did mention those groups. You did. And the reason I don't is because I don't want people to feel like they're being pigeonholed, meaning go someplace and share with a power greater than yourself, and try not to think of yourself as your own are, whether it's the ocean, a rock, a group of people, a faith-based, you know, a clinician, a therapist, whatever you want to call them, but try not to do life alone. It's really, really hard. And the whole idea of having somebody who genuinely cares about you and is willing to listen to what it is you have to say and will be patient with you with that is something, in my opinion, missing in our world today. We're just moving so quickly. We're so distracted. and we're in such a hurry, we want to be right, and we're moving on to the next thing before we've even completed the one thing that we came in the room to start.
You know, that is so profound. And talk about, you know, things go by so fast. You are such a fascinating resource, and you've mentioned stuff I've never heard of. So 1 hour doesn't do it. You're going to have to come back and join us again and tell us about some of these groups, because that's amazing. I know a couple of them. I mean, they're the most famous. But some of the others, maybe we can make up a resource sheet. I don't know. It's, you know, you got to come back and talk some more, because we only have a minute left.
Anytime that I can be a resource for somebody, and even if I can't be, I'll give them some websites. You know, one of the big ones here in San Diego is 211. You call 211 and say, I'm looking for a self-help support group. They've got one of the largest databases in the whole county.
Wow.
And you know, go online and just say, I'm looking for a self-help group, and then plug in whatever wording you want to put there. You'd be amazed at what pops up. And a lot of this can be done online. You can do Zoom meetings. You can do Skype meetings. You can do chat rooms where you're actually talking to the people. You can actually go to an open meeting, and there'll be people that are actually having conversations about, you know, depression, being alone during the holidays. And this is, by the way, the highest suicide month of the year. So what a great time to start doing some outreach. Can I give my phone number out again? So
with only 30 seconds left, I have to thank you for coming. And you guys, until next week, it's okay to flip your wig. It's not okay to lose your mind.
Thanks for tuning in this week to Dr. Red Says. Please join Dr. Sarah Young, a.k.a. Dr. Red, again next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. In the next week, laugh in the face of adversity and move forward.